and you're on the front porch. This is where we talk about the tough issues facing West Virginia and Appalachia like you and your friends do on your front porch. This week, we're going to talk about what is great about Appalachia, what makes this place special. I'm Scott Finn, the outgoing Grand Poobah here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, joined by Jessie Troyan. She's the development director and a PhD economist at the Cardinal Institute here in Charleston. Hey, Jessie.
Hey, Scott.
And Rick Wilson. He is our hillbilly philosopher with the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
What big thing do you appreciate about Appalachia that you think makes it different maybe from the mainstream culture?
I think one of the big ones is that sort of relationships tend to be personal here. I mean, there's that quote in West Virginia, everything's political except politics, and that's personal. That is literally true. Just in general, the way people relate, even if you're going to go to a bank and apply for a loan or whatever, you stop and shoot the breeze or the bull as you prefer. And I think that's generally the way we do it. We don't operate very much in a bureaucratic mode.
There is this expectation that that everybody will get to know you face-to-face. The face-to-face relationships are important and expected.
In a lot of other places, it's like, what's your job? What's your title? And around here, it's, oh, who's your mama? Who's your grandmama? Your grandmother was my mother's third grade English teacher. These relationships are so intertwined. It's like this nest.
Yeah, and it's an antidote to a lot of the ills I think we have in society, the rootlessness. You know, the opposite of that personalism you're describing, Rick, is social media, which is lots of shallow relationships with people, not face-to-face. You know, it's one of the big reasons I came to West Virginia after graduating from Harvard. I was looking for a place to be rooted, and I recognized that I had something in myself that desired maybe recognition.
Hegel said it was all about recognition. You called me a philosopher today in that.
What did he say?
I mean, it's like one of the driving forces of history, that a lot of the conflicts that take place between people, whatever, is this desire for recognition, the need for it.
I had a big car accident when I was a junior in high school. And what it started me on a path toward realizing is that sort of shallow recognition, like of a title or money or awards or whatever, it doesn't get you very far when you're in a hospital bed. You know, you really realize that that's not what was important. What was important is the people in your life and the fact that they want to come and visit you and express their concern about you. And this is the sort of place, West Virginia, that forces you to develop personal relationships with people. And it has helped me to learn how to do that. And so I love this place. How about you, Jesse? What is the thing about this place that you think is unique and special?
For the years that I spent in the D.C. suburbs, you would run into somebody, maybe they've got a West Virginia hat on, you know, you see the flying WV, and you're like, oh, you're from West Virginia. But there's this statewide identity, like you're a West Virginian first, about the only place that I can think of that loves their state more than West Virginians love West Virginia is Texans.
Yeah, and Texans are obnoxious. So,
yeah, West Virginians are cute. Texans are obnoxious. It really is a tribal thing. I mean, I've had the same experience. You're out of state and you meet someone and you just roll around in your West Virginia hood. And where are you from and what school did you go to? And, oh, my God, I love that. And you just go right there. It's a real instant kind of bond. The other thing is there's also a West Virginia diaspora, and people really do have a sense and feeling of being in exile. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat and we wept when we remembered Zion. You know, it's the way people feel when they're in a flat-landed place and they're thinking about where they're from, you know.
I wonder if one reason why West Virginians react as West Virginians, first of all, you know, we were a state that was formed in the Civil War. It's a dramatic way of being birthed. It isn't just you waited long enough, you became a territory, then you're a state. There's a very strong state narrative. And then with the coal industry coming in the way it did in many parts of the state, one industry uniting most of the state in a very dramatic story there. There's a wonderful narrative around West Virginia. And then also, you have to admit, part of it is that it's because people make fun of us and put us down. And, you know, anytime that happens to a group of people, the reaction is for you to knit together. It forms a stronger identity to be attacked. So I think that's part of it as well.
I think it's kind of what you spoke to. There's this underdog nature that a lot of the initial inhabitants of what is now known as West Virginia. It's kind of your ethnic outcasts, if you will, like some of your Irish especially that were not particularly welcomed and were kind of looked down upon in more metropolitan areas. That it's like, no, forget you guys. We're going to come out here. We're going to do our own thing and we're going to make it. And by God, we did.
My thing that I think makes West Virginia special and different from the rest of the country is Becky. And Becky was this young woman that I met when I was in Big Ugly as a Vista. And she was a single mom. She had a kid that was 4 years old. And she lived with her parents. She was so smart and she was hardworking. And then she found a job in Columbus, Ohio, which from Big Ugly, it's a good 3.5-4 hours away. Well, it wasn't easy for her to make that leap to move to another city, but she did. And then later, her mom and dad got sick. I think it was her dad, actually, who got sick. And he would have to go into a nursing home unless he got more care. And, you know, her mom couldn't take care of her dad by herself. And so what does Becky do? She quits her job in Columbus, and she moves back to Lincoln County to take care of her dad. And I looked at that, and I'm like, that is such a different set of choices than a lot of people that I know. Some people might say it was a bad choice for her personally and for her son. Maybe. But you got to admire the fact that she has her priorities straight. Right? That's very countercultural and interesting and different. Okay, Rick, you had something you wanted us to do.
All right, here's the scenario. Imagine that, like, we're in prison and we're going to be executed the next day because we're not in West Virginia, you know, because we don't have the death penalty here, thank God. So you get to pick your last meal. And so my question is, what would your last hillbilly meal be?
Ooh, I'm a little bit cheating here, but I want a Kanawha County Schools pepperoni roll and a Tudor's biscuit.
Kanawha County Schools pepperoni roll?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So as a kid growing up, going to school in Kanawha County, about once a month, there would be pepperoni roll day on the school lunch calendar. Oh, it's still one of the best pepperoni rolls I've ever had made by someone else.
Again and again in West Virginia food, you have these foods that other cultures might have seen as not the most, you know, how can I say it, not the fanciest food. The pepperoni roll was born out of necessity. Right?
Yeah.
Something that you could take down in the mines. It was cheap. It was easy to make. And yet, you know, we've made it delicious. Well, Rick, what's your hillbilly last meal?
I'm not exaggerating. This is my all-time favorite. Pinto beans and cornbread, fried taters, and maybe some kale with vinegar. Damn. I mean, that's it.
They're beans. What makes the beans special? Are they made in a special way? Is there stuff in them?
I mean, usually you cook them with, you know, some kind of pork to season it and stuff.
That there's another great example. You know, beans and cornbread are a poor man's meal. No ifs, ands, or buts. That's why West Virginians ate it so much. I gotta admit, that's one that's not my. I just never got that. It's like beans. You know, how can you love beans? Or how are beans delicious? They're just beans.
For me, there's better than meat. You know, see, I'm a cheap date.
My big thing is the slaw dog. And people in West Virginia don't even, I don't think, realize that they have this thing that's kind of unique. I have to admit, when I came here and people would give you this hot dog, it would be full of things that I had never had on a hot dog before together at the same time. The sauce in Iowa, that's what we call Sloppy Joe. You put a sweet meat sauce in it, which is different. And then on top of that, you put just tons of coleslaw. And that was it. I never had that before. And actually, it grew on me over time. And now that's like my go-to dog. And literally, you don't see that much outside of southern West Virginia.
You won't see it in Vermont a lot. My wife thinks it's weird that I put sauce on hot dogs sometimes.
And in northern West Virginia, they do sort of a hot, like Yan's hot dogs.
I love Yan's hot dogs.
Oh, that's a good version of it, too. It's sort of a hot meat sauce.
Yeah, if you ask for ketchup on them, you're going to be thrown into the river, too.
And that's a change, because when I came here, I just wanted the relish and the ketchup, what I knew. And then over time, I'm like, no, this is a superior dog. And someday, somebody's going to crack the code on selling the slaw dog nationally.
There you go.
We have this unique and interesting place with unique and interesting people and unique and interesting cuisine in a world where it seems like people are hungry for that difference. What would have to change here for us to be able to actually benefit from our cultural differences? Are we at a point in our culture now where that those things used to be seen as embarrassments? But now I think those differences are seen as pluses.
One thing, we're in danger. We're losing a lot of that, which is these fast food sprawl, things like that, and a lot of local businesses going under and stuff. So, I'm hoping this revival of local food movement, could bring us back into that, locally produced, locally grown, regional recipes and heritage breeds and things like that.
So let's talk to our economist. What does it take to take this potential asset, this culture asset, and turn it into livings, more livings for people?
Some of what has helped Appalachian culture, West Virginian culture, is some of these, like Anthony Bourdain coming to West Virginia. I think Andrew Zimmern has been here too. That it's showing this heritage cuisine in a really positive light, and it's not in some sort of a looking down upon it way. That it's being able to show it in a positive light.
Yeah, I remember my first meal as a Vista worker in West Virginia on Big Ugly Creek, because we were doing work at the school, and one of the women up the road brought food for everybody. It was Vienna sausages, saltine crackers, and thank God, Little Debbie snack cakes, those star cakes. I love those. But the whole thing, soup to nuts, is awful for you, and all bought out of a box or a can or whatever. And it wasn't until much later that I found that there were still people, mostly older people, growing their own food, making things the old way, and how delicious that could be. And so I think you're right. I think it's about us as West Virginians rediscovering this past that we were convinced by national marketers, essentially, in the national media, that this past was worthless and we needed to get on the modern, into the modern world. Well, no, that past actually has the seeds, I think, for our revival if we're willing to bring it back.
When I was a little kid, when you look back, we had these neighbors, Bessie and Hinton Richmond were their names, and they were like carved out of the original rock of Appalachia. He would follow bees to their nest. He would go out and go singing, going to get ginseng and, all these folk things, all these like traditional medicine, saying a Bible verse for this or that thing. They were just so cool. And I really regret that I was too young to try to capture that. I was just a kid. But there's a lot of that's lost, unfortunately.
It's true. But a lot of it's in your head. The fact that you just naturally spout off Bible verses and, Greek.
Hegel today. So.
And philosophers, too. I think there's a rich tradition of that. There's no place in the universe where you get people so open about their lives when you interview them. And the most beautiful things come out of people's mouths if you just sit there and listen for long enough, which is another value of living here. It's teaching you the value of taking the time to get to know somebody and listen. So, thank you, West Virginia. I'm who I am in large part because of what you taught me. And this is a wonderful place. And these strengths, I think, are going to be the salvation of this place. That's the Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, temporarily still Grand Poobah here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, along with Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee and Jesse Troyan of the Cardinal Institute. Take care.